Hello and welcome to episode 14 of series 5 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. We've covered the topic of psychological safety on the show before, and it's something I wanted to come back to, but this time from the perspective of how psychological safety links to our ability to understand what we can control and what we can't control in the world. And that's both on a personal level, but also how we help our employees to understand that as well. One of the things I find in the work that I do that is most often the root cause of holding organizations or teams or individuals back is the sense that we don't know what we can control and we obsess over things that are completely outside of our control. So with our guest today, we're going to explore some ideas and a specific model that they use in their work to help them to help leaders and other people within the organization to understand the degree of control and agency that they actually have and to understand some of the barriers and restrictions that they impose upon themselves when it comes to doing their work. Now, I think this is highly relevant in the kind of work that we all do in a tone of the conversation, the tone of the communications that we put out there, but also how we coach and mentor our leaders to help them to understand the impact that they have on the culture of the organization. So I hope you find this an interesting conversation. My guest today is Tom Dardick. Tom is an experienced public speaker, writer, and facilitator, and an interpersonal communication coach and consultant. For over 20 years, Tom's full-time focus has been helping leaders and their people strategy. Over the past 3 years, he has been developing an innovative approach to helping leaders create a culture characterized by mutual respect and trust. His model, which is also the name of his company on podcast, which is the Eye of Power, is a way for people to make and sustain psychologically positive changes and do so as a team. The net effect is less resistance to change, higher quality relationships, greater alignment, and an enhanced sense of purpose. So, hello, Tom. How are you doing? And could you tell the listeners where you're based, please?
Hello, Craig. I'm based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Fantastic. And we've just been talking. We're recording this the day after the total eclipse in the States. So you were talking about that. So amazing experience, yeah?
Absolutely. I was able to walk in the park with my wife and we had those filter glasses. We were taking turns looking as the moon went right in front of the sun and we didn't have total here. Pretty close.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So I've read out your kind of backstory there and what you're doing now. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your current work, but also maybe the path that led you to what you're doing now?
It's a long story, so I'll give you the highlights. I've been a student of the human condition, I'm going to say, my whole life. I was sort of born that way to wonder, you know, how could things be better? Why are things the way they are? And what can we do to optimize things for ourselves and for other people? And I've had other interests besides that, of course, that have shaped the course of my career. But I was helping a friend of mine it's about 25 years ago now, helping a friend of mine with his fledgling company. He was a coach, a business coach, and he came up with the idea. He was also a black belt martial artist and came up with the idea that, hey, you know, the way you acquire skills in martial arts might apply in other areas. So our informal partnership became formal and we started something we called the Communication Gym, which was a way to break down communication techniques, skills, and break them down, practice them. And we built a belt system like the martial arts do. And it was a good run. And I'll tell you what I loved about it, whereas we help people and learn those kinds of things and improve their effectiveness in conversations. The thing I did not like is that we experienced the same thing as other gyms did. People would pay their dues and we wouldn't see them. We had, right? How many people pay their dues to the health club and actually show that month? Well, it's Pareto's law. It's 20% or so. And we've experienced the same thing. And I wondered why. Well, why would somebody do that and not really follow through? And of course, we're like that. But I sort of fell out of love with how to do things and more enamored in why to do things. Because I found that when we're connected to purpose, when we know our whys in the world, we figure out the hows. I think why is the first thing that we need to know to marshal our energy to accomplish anything. So anyway, that got me into my consulting practice, connecting people to purpose. And I've been doing that since 2011.
Yeah, excellent. Oh, hear, hear to that as well.
What's that?
Hear, hear to the story there about the you know, it starts with you know, the why is a, you know, I know it's something a lot of people talk about, but it I think it's often forgotten. We've too easy to get into the how and the what rather than focusing on the why. So I totally agree with you on that one.
Very much. I mean, it seems obvious when we talk about it like this, but it's an easy thing to drift away from for very complicated psychological reasons. Mm. And so that sort of leads me to the genesis of the Eye of Power, where I was thinking about, why can't we make positive changes? So one of the things I'll ask people is, you ever make a New Year's resolution and then not keep it? Mm. And of course, most people can relate to that. Mm. And the question is, why? Why can't we just decide to do something and then do it? And of course, the answer to that is we're more than meets the eye. We're complicated. And we think we understand things, but really, I think of ourselves as like the iceberg. Our self-picture is the part of the iceberg that shows above the water. That doesn't mean that there isn't a whole lot that we don't see that clearly below the water. And so how are we going to do that? And that's where I started thinking about the Eye of Power as a map, a flashlight, a way to navigate those parts of ourselves that otherwise sort of remain out of our minds.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
There's a big problem here. This is a nice thing to do, and I think it's useful, but it is not in itself a solution, because we are not moved by intellect. We are moved by emotion. And that's one thing. And then the other thing is that we can't see our blind spots. So no matter what model we use, we can only see so much of that iceberg below the surface. There's things that just remain hidden to us almost no matter what.
Yeah.
So for those two things, life is not an individual sport. To grow, to become the full expressed version of yourself, you need other people.
Yeah.
And this is also something that people know. This is not a big secret. But the skill and the intentionality of using other people and being around people that are going to support you in that positive change way that you may not even know you need at first, this is an advanced place to be. This takes some development. We don't just happen upon that unaided. That's why the Eye of Power is the way it is. It's a protocol that people use to have healthy conversations over a long period of time.
Yeah, we'll come and talk. We're definitely going to focus on the Eye of Power shortly. I just want to, before we dive into that, Tom, I just want to kind of dial back into the kind of the work that you're doing there and just building on what you've already just said there. So you're working with leaders to help them kind of develop their organizational culture and, you know, have these psychologically healthy conversations. I'm intrigued as to, and I think I get it, and I'm pretty sure I get it. Just for the listeners' benefit, just to explain, you know, why that is an important skill to have in the world that we're in at the moment, the working world that we're in at the moment, and the wider world as well. Why is it important that we have leaders who can have those sort of psychologically directed and psychologically healthy conversations with their employees?
I think it's always been crucially important, but if anything, it's getting more and more so. Primarily because of the impacts of technology. Modern organizations are built such that it's not really how we are wired to naturally behave and think. So we have remote work, we have hybrid work, we have automation, we have the onset of a rapidly, rapidly changing work environment based on the impact of AI and other technologies. And these are things that are disorienting. And so we make a lot of assumptions. The world of work has been, I'm going to call it a relatively low-level proposition over in most cases, in most places. And the reason I say that is because, according to the Gallup organization, about 75% of the people in the world that are working are either actively disengaged or not engaged in their work. In other words, only 1 in 4 people are feeling like they're being fulfilled by the things they're doing with most of their time. I don't think that's too good a picture. I think we can do better than that. And I think the reason that we're not engaged is because of what you were pointing to, Craig. The cultures in organizations are level one. They're another word I'll use is transactional, right?
Yeah.
I have this skill or this ability. It's worth X amount of dollars. You pay me something slightly less than that, and we're happy. We go on our merry way, and I give you, as long as I give you the thing you're paying me for, that's all that's the totality of the equation.
Yeah.
And that is, I'll call that level one. But as the future unfolds, I don't think it's going to stay that way, because level one is going to, well, especially for any work that can be automated, will be automated. So we're going to need something more than that. We're going to need the sense of belonging, the sense of contribution, the sense of that unique individual that we all are, that's seen and wants to be seen. And this creates some conditions that have to exist in a culture in order for that to thrive. And the impetus is on leaders to create that. The problem is they can't just dictate it. They can't just say it. It has to be lived by everybody in that organization. Great leaders know that, and whether they know it consciously or not, they put those things in place that make that happen. But like I said, the state of the art has got a lot of room for improvement. So the backdrop against.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. And I know one of the things that's really important to your work, and we talked about this before we recorded, is this idea of personal agency and power. And I'm a big advocate for things like, you know, the kind of ideas like ladder of accountability and, you know, kind of circles of control and influence, that sort of thing. I'm very much into the idea of, you know, kind of helping people to feel empowered, even if they're inherently sort of pessimistic and think that things just happen to them. I think that's one of the greatest transformations you can make in individuals, is to give them a sense of agency. So do you want to just say a little bit more about how that factors into your work? And again, you know, from your perspective, why you think that's a really important part of this equation that we're talking about today?
Well, obviously, I couldn't agree more with you on that, because what is our life? What are we here to do? And the eye of power is based on it's named so, the model looks like an eye, but really it's helping us see our power, see our agency, get more of ourselves expressed into this world. And so we ask, well, what's in the way? What stops us? And the model helps us see those things. And really, one thing, just speaking in general terms, Craig, and this is, you know, something that's well known, is we waste energy when we direct it towards anything that we actually cannot control. And we maximize our energy and our agency by directing it towards those things that are under our control. And just as a general rule of thumb, the things that are under our control are fairly limited. They're the internal things that we can adjust when we put our energy towards that. We can't really control other people too much. We're very, very limited. So when we expend our energy trying to do that, it's at our own detriment. So that's sort of, I think, the table stakes as it relates to gaining agency.
No, absolutely. I know. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. So anyway, you mentioned that's kind of at the heart of the eye of power. Let's maybe dive into that. And I'm conscious that you know it's a very visual model, and we're kind of doing it through an auditory channel here. So what might help is, I know you've said, you know, the eye, it is an eye-shaped model. I've seen it and we've talked about it, but maybe, you know, it might help with the listener to sort of just describe both what it looks like, but also how it's kind of structured, so we can kind of then maybe unpick it in a little bit more detail, if that's all right, Tom.
Wonderful. So it starts with the what I call the power grid, which is simply a description of how our agency shows up in the world. So what can we do? Well, we can think and we can act. So think of that as an axis. What we think about affects our actions. How we act affects our thoughts. So this is a spectrum, and that's one of the axes that we use in the power grid. Against that, so that would be, think of that as the vertical line. Against that, we think of the horizontal line, which is our thoughts and actions can be directed about ourselves or inward, or they can be directed about other people or outward. So I call that self or society. So that creates four quadrants, because we have the think, act, self, others, and that creates sort of the description of how we move in the world. Thinking about those things, then, what are the nature of each one of those resulting quadrants? I came up with basically four layers, two that are repressive or that hold us in place, two that are empowering that move us forward. So the eye emerges as we think of these layers, and the four layers are the four corruptions, the four quests, the four traps, and the four capacities. So each one in each quadrant. So that creates a grid of 16.
So these are like concentric circles overlaid over that 2x2. Hence the eye, and that's the kind of the where the eye emerges. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. And as you can see, you've got four concentric circles, so four layers, and each quadrant has a kind of a quartered segment of each of those circles. Yeah.
Exactly right. That's how the model is constructed.
Yeah.
And so we start in the center where the pupil is, so the black part of our eye.
Yeah.
That's what I call the four corruptions. So those are the things, one per each quadrant, that hold us in place, that keep us from moving forward at the pace that we would maybe consciously prefer to move.
Yeah. And we're not going to be able to cover all four of those, Tom, I guess. But yeah, but we maybe give an example of, you know, in this quadrant, here's an example of one of those corruptions, so we can get a flavor for it.
Sure. Let's start with what I tend to start with, the quadrant that is actions directed about ourselves. So the things we do on our own behalf.
Yes.
I call that the pain quadrant. Why? Because the things we're willing to do in terms of that we think are benefiting us is very much dictated by our relationship with pain. You know, they say no pain, no gain, right? So how uncomfortable are you willing to be? How willing are you to try a new thing? How much, if you're afraid of something, how much are you going to let that stop you? That's a determinant of your power as it relates to the actions you're willing to take on your own behalf.
So I guess I'm just trying to think of an example then. So, you know, I'm a bit out of shape, and I'm going to take up with sort of going to the gym. Like, we used that as an example earlier, didn't we? So maybe is that, would that kind of fit into that quadrant? Yeah. Of threshold. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Any positive change. And I'll say that any specific example, like you just pointed to, Craig, could show up in any of the quadrants.
Yeah.
It could be one or all four. It's going to be depending on the state that you're in at the moment, the kind of person you are. I mean, it's a lot of variables in there.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So we're just trying to get to what might be true for you in the moment that's stopping your progress. So the corruption in that quadrant and the pain quadrant is something, it's a type of fear. I call it consternation. And it's the kind of fear that says, if I do this, I'll either miss out on this or something bad might happen. And we entertain our imaginations are absolutely super brilliant and powerful. It's what created all the marvels of the world. But they also create all the dangers that in our minds that aren't necessarily real, that hold us in place. So it's a consternation is a wonderful servant and a horrible master.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's the inner circle of the eye, and we'll just maybe focus on that quadrant just for simplicity. Yeah. So then the next layer out, what comes next then, Tom?
So then the next layer are the four quests. So these are the questions that once we start in earnest following, they move us forward. So in the pain quadrant, what do I do? What am I specifically going to do? How do I move forward? You're in that quest. So we would take things in whatever steps, you know, it might be baby steps. It might be a big leap. It's going to be different based on the presenting issue, the person, all these, there's a lot of variables, but it's just forward motion. All you need is forward motion. It doesn't matter how big or how fast the motion is.
Yeah.
So okay. That's the quest.
Yeah. That's the question. Did you say the next three layers are all kind of building? I mean, I guess they're all building on each other, but are they similar or different?
Well, no, so just because you're moving doesn't mean you're going to keep moving, stay moving, and that it's going to go the way you want, right? So there's another factor involved here that we have to pay attention to. And I call that layer the four traps.
Right.
So
okay. In that quadrant, what would the trap be there?
So in that, it's another kind of fear. It's the kind of fear that says if I do this, then this other thing could happen. So it's sort of related to this type of fear at the corruption, but it's more granular.
Yeah. 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 And I guess it's based on like some experience at that point, because you've tried something, you're going to kind of overcome the initial fear, you've tried something, and now you've kind of come across another fear which may be debilitating. Yeah,
exactly. You think, again, we're more complicated than meets the eye, so we think we're on to, you know, one element of something, and the actual term I use for this kind of fear is called conjecture.
Right.
So,
okay.
So it's a game we play with ourselves. Well, if I do this, then this other thing might happen. Or what if this? Or so we get we're wasting energy on things we can't control, and we're stopping ourselves in our tracks. And so, and the other thing is, whenever we're trying to do something new, we sometimes default to this picture like, okay, I'm going to just do this and it's going to just steadily get better and better and better day by day. That's not how the world works.
No,
just watch the market. Let's say you watch a stock that you're invested in. Is it going to just, even if it's a good company, is it going to just continually go straight up? Of course not.
Unlikely.
So it fluctuates, and you just hope the slope is going to go up. And it's the same thing with nearly all processes. So we have to have our expectations such that it's a long-term play, where we have to be careful about our metrics and our expectations there.
Yeah. And I guess using our kind of recurring theme of the gym, it's that kind of, you know, I managed to, you know, kind of drag myself to go to the gym. Like, I've been going for a month now and I'm kind of on the scales and, you know, nothing's changed. And it's that, you know, am I doing the right thing? Am I just wasting my time? Am I ever going to be fit? It's that sort of nagging doubt, isn't it, that you get at that stage?
Exactly right. Or you might be going to the gym for a while and oops, I'm actually gaining weight.
Yeah. Which
it's not working, right?
I guess
this whole health thing is not for me.
Yes. Yeah. That's kind of the interface of like annoying physiological with psychological, isn't it? But because I think a lot of people will resonate with that. So then, what's the final layer, the outer layer of this of the eye? Then in this
final layer
quadrant?
In the pain quadrant is I call it the four capacities. It's really the virtue of courage. And courage, people have sometimes they have a different view of what courage is. Some people think of brave people as just not being afraid, and that's really not what courage is. Courage is the capacity to act even when you are afraid. So it's a capacity. We can think of it like a muscle, right? It's something that when you use it, it gets strong, and when you neglect it, it gets weak. So we want to be in the habit of pushing ourselves in places that we actually have some fear, because it builds our courage muscle. And that muscle is the one of courage and honesty are the foundation of all virtues. So it's the first order of business for all people.
Excellent. And obviously we've not covered the other four quadrants, but I guess, you know, we kind of, you know, without simplifying it, they mirror that sort of structure that you've just talked about there for that particular
exactly
quadrant.
Exactly right. The other dynamics based on whether it's thoughts or actions directed towards ourselves or others.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I think that's a really nice description, given the kind of limitations of doing it from an audio perspective. So I guess what would be good, Tom, just to sort of maybe, you know, I use my own kind of working case study there, but maybe, you know, a kind of an example of how you might use that then with a leadership team or with a leader or an individual or a group, just to help them to kind of navigate that without, you know, going into the specifics of the model. But what's the sort of typical use case for how you kind of coach, train, and help them to kind of master that sort of structure?
Yes. So the thing that I really try to stay away from is the idea of training. Remember, I talked about the communication gym and the how to do things, and I don't really want to spend a lot of time on the techniques and the learning how to do that or that. We want to connect to purpose. And also remember when we're talking earlier about how we can't see our own blind spots and we need the connections of relationship and other people because we're moved emotionally. For those reasons, we don't use this model by ourselves. We do it through a guide system. And the way we employ it in organizations is everybody who's participating is assigned a guide and functions as a guide to somebody else.
Okay.
And so you're having these conversations, and each week we look at one aspects of the model. So you're going around the model. There's 16 different segments, four layers of four quadrants. And so we're going to go in a tempo of 16 weeks. So each month is a new quadrant and there's a look through the lens. So it's a short look. You're going to look like it's going to be like a 15 to 20 minute, maybe 25 minute video that just explains what that lens is that week. And then out of that, there's a prompt, you're going through a form that gets you to decide, okay, what am I going to do different this week? And then with your guide, you say, this is what I'm going to do different this week. And then once you've done it once, then now there's a track record, right? We can look back to how the week went.
Yeah.
So those conversations become, how did it go? And then what are you going to do different? And those are that's the way the conversation goes. It's very tight because remember, you know, people are at work here, so they don't have a lot of bandwidth to be able to spend hours and hours going through, you know, all the various elements of what they could and should and might do, right? That would be outside of the banks of the system. What we're trying to do is get it very tight, very time efficient, focused on the actions. And then there's an accountability function because the guide is going to report green, yellow, red. There's only three options. Green is the person's doing it and they're making progress as they would hope to. Yellow is they're kind of doing it, or they're doing it, but there's issues or there's some sort of thing that's a flag. Red means they didn't do it. And it doesn't matter what the excuse is. It could be a perfectly fine excuse. They're on vacation. They got sick. A project came up. Doesn't matter. If you didn't do it, it's still a red. So the guide's there to help the person clarify what the action is, but also to just report how it's going. And then the system flags. If you get two reds or three yellows, the administrator says, okay, is this the right timing for you to be doing this?
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a way to have this be a permanent part of the culture where you're not having to have these sessions or have these webinars or send people to courses. You might, because they might identify, hey, this is a needed development that I didn't think about before. And so, you know, you might take some sort of developmental remedial action on something that otherwise would go unearthed. But that's not what the program is. The program is just the person taking those, I call them sustained incremental actions, SIAs. So they're just doing it's little actions as a result of the look through the lenses in concert with other people.
Yeah.
And then they're serving that other person in the same way. So not only am I holding somebody accountable, I'm holding somebody else accountable too.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can often learn as much from holding other people accountable about yourself as you sometimes you do when you it's kind of the physician heal thyself sort of thing, isn't it? It's
huge the, element. First of all, you want to learn something, teach it to somebody else, but also if you want to be a good leader, right? It's good to know what's involved in being a good follower. And if you want to be a good guide, it's a good idea, it's good idea to practice that, right? To understand, hey, I'm not doing this person a favor if I give them a green when it should have been a red.
Yeah.
Right. That's not helping anybody.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's really refreshing your approach, Tom, and I'm a massive, kind of advocate for this moving away from training. You can't, like you said earlier, right at the outset, this isn't something you can train people in. This is a very much kind of a discovery process, and I love accountability groups. I'm a member of a few myself for different purposes, but that whole kind of, it's a lonely, even if you're working in an organization with thousands of people, it can be very lonely at times in terms of that this whole, personal journey that you're on. You can kind of be, you can sacrifice your own requirements sometimes for others, and you don't ever know whether you're doing the right thing or not. And I think this kind of whole accountability setup and mastermind groups, or call them what you wish, is a really important thing that anybody should be doing, whatever the context is. And I think in the context of your model, it's absolutely appropriate to do it that way. I think you've hit upon the perfect way of doing it, I think. I'm here to that as well. So just kind of bringing things to a conclusion then, Tom. So, I mean,
Because as you were speaking there, you were getting me tied into the question of, who would benefit most, or what are some of the things that you could expect? And it's funny, as a result of this conference I was at last week, I came up with a picture of, it's actually inspired by my brother who just retired. He was sort of a new regime came into his company and didn't match his philosophy. And he had some, they'd been kind of pulling in different directions for quite some time. And long story short, they offered him severance. They didn't think he'd take it, but he did. Mm. And so he had a very successful career in software development as a software development executive. And he knew he was successful. He knew intellectually that he'd done well, just like a lot of people have had long careers but they don't really know what their impact is. It's sort of like It's a Wonderful Life, right? We don't really know we don't see all the ripple effects of all of our actions. And it took my brother Greg leaving before people came and said how much he'd meant to them. So he had, if you might recall the movie Mr. Holland's Opus, where it was Richard Dreyfuss was a music teacher and he had aspirations to be this big composer that did great things. And he felt like his life had been sort of an also ran because all he was this music teacher. And it took him his retirement before he saw how much of an impact he had on his community. Mm. And I think this is something that a lot of people, I'm going to say most people, go through, where they don't see how appreciated, how much positivity they've actually contributed in the world. Mm. And so one thing I'm hoping this kind of protocol starts to unearth is people start to see this as they have those more courageous, honest conversations. They start to see, wow, this really meant a lot to this person, you can feel that sense of fulfillment before the last day when you happen to be going out the door.
No, I think that's,
so I just wanted to add that because I think it's important.
No, absolutely no. I think that's a very good point to make, Tom. I agree with you. It's like, sometimes we do leave it too late, don't we? I remember when I left my last corporate job, the one I had before I started my own business. I remember my old boss said to me, people never remember how you joined the organization, but they always remember how you left. And I think, all that's maybe not exactly what you were saying there. I think, you're shaped by, whether people are really, genuinely sort of sad to see you go, or whether it's a case of, you feel as though you've already been going to be missed, but sometimes you only realize it at that when it's too late, and you kind of walking out the door with your kind of box under your arm with all your belongings in it, and you're off to another adventure. So yeah, I totally resonates with me that, Tom. So just bringing things to a conclusion, Tom, because I think it's been really, really interesting. And I love your model, and we'll put some links into the show notes for listeners to if they want to have a look at that visually, look at that Eye of Power model, and also your own podcast. I'll mention that at the end. Just finally, though, before we wrap up, I mean, I guess we're talking to people here in corporate comms and organizational development and employee engagement, and we've touched upon all of those areas, I think, in what you've said there. I mean, in terms of it may be repeating what we've already said around, you know, the kind of the importance of psychological healthy conversations in the kind of weird world that we find ourselves in at the moment. I mean, is there anything else you want to add there in terms of, you know, your models, your approaches that you know, if you could say one thing to that audience? I know it's a very kind of a broad brush generic way of summing up a whole bunch of people with very diverse backgrounds and jobs and roles and that sort of thing, but just broadly speaking to that audience, what one thing would you want to kind of put out there, Tom, in terms of, you know, your way you work and the kind of models that your model you've got there, and the way that you've, you know, you just talked about that importance of knowing what you're doing and you're doing the right things, that sort of thing?
I would just add that the model is a flashlight. It's going to reveal.
Yeah.
And so it might not be right for everybody. I would just qualify it. It's the model's right for the kinds of leaders and the kinds of organizations that want to be based on respect and trust, and therefore look at merit and contribution and are willing to just get real. Because if we're in a place where we're pretending, or we want to play political games, or we want to remain veiled behind our protective layers, this model's not good for any of that. So it's not going to be right for everybody, but anybody who wants to move into the light of reality, where our power actually is, that's what it's going to be good for.
Okay, excellent. That's a great way of finishing off the conversation. So, Tom, where can our listeners find out more about you? I've got a link, some links that I'm going to put into the show notes here, which you'll find on our website. So we've got your LinkedIn profile, and we've got the Eye of Power, which is your website.com, eyeofpower.com, and we've also got your podcast, I believe. Do you actually just want to tell us a little bit about your podcast in case, not in case, but I'm sure listeners will find that of interest as well. Just tell us a little bit about your podcast, the style of the podcast, what sort of things you cover off.
Sure. Eyeofpower.com is sort of the hub, so that anybody who wants to find me or interface with me, that's probably the place I'd say first. The Eye of Power podcast has been I'm just putting out as we record today is the 108th episode. So been doing it a little while.
Well done.
Used to come out once a week. Now I've got such a backlog of interviews that it's coming out Tuesdays and Fridays. But it's oftentimes it's been interviews. I didn't start with interviews, but for the past few months I've been doing them. And I got to tell you, what we're doing right now, Craig, is I love it. I love our conversations, getting to know you. I feel like I have a new friend. And it happens to me all the time on my podcast with my guests. I feel like I have a new friend. I have friends all over the world that when I go to those parts, I can ring up and say, hey, you want to have a coffee together? And chances are good, we will. And just a wonderful aspect. And then also, of course, the perspectives that different people get. You know, reality is reality. Truth is truth. Humans are humans. But each walk that we have is so unique and different that we're never going to run out of different ways to describe it and different ways to come to the being together. And so that's the human enterprise, and we might as well enjoy it. So that's the spirit behind the podcast. Some of them are intellectual, but I'm moving in the direction of trying to connect more to heart. It's the head and heart. You need both pedals going. And so I'm naturally sort of an intellectual type of person, more in my head, and I'm learning over time to sort of get more connected to that heart side. And really, I think we're really get our most power when we just can get both those things going and have all of our resources and our, and we're able to be present for people, the people right in front of us. That's where the rubber meets the road.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, that's very much the spirit of this podcast as well. You know, it started
I definitely get that.
So that's great. And then, yeah, it's kind of driven by my own personal curiosity, I think, I love listening to people like yourself kind of talking about their ideas and just, you know, kind of just having that chat and recording it. So yeah, brilliant. Well, look, Tom, that's been absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed that. And I've personally got a better understanding of your higher power model now. And I'm going to have a delve into it again and have a look at it again now in the context of the conversation that we've had. And I recommend the listeners do the same. And all that remains for me is to say thank you so much. Really enjoyed the conversation. And thank you for reaching out to me and suggesting that we record this conversation. So really, really grateful, Tom. Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Craig. Thank you. I've enjoyed getting to know you. I've enjoyed our conversation. Of course, whenever you get a chance to talk about yourself, it's fun, right?
But yeah,
you know, I'm obviously passionate about what I do, so I'm so thankful for the opportunity to do so with you. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tom. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.